as if I come, I'm very grateful to be here, but I come with little to offer you that you don't already have at a center like CIMC, where there is such a richness of teachers and perspectives and practice. That being said, I'm honored to be here and grateful for the invitation. I also come without a plan, but I figure that's okay, because you probably don't have a plan either, unless the plan might be to attain enlightenment. So if that happens by the end of the evening, please let me know. We want to know how you did it. It's also okay to come without a plan, because natural awareness, the topic of tonight's talk, has no plan. For that reason, I came that way. One of the most profound questions we can ask ourselves on the spiritual path is the question, who am I? This question, who am I? When we ask that question, we might come up with a whole lot of answers. Our name might be an answer that comes up. Maybe our sense of identity. Our job, our work might come up. A feeling might come up. Our body might come up, and our mind and heart might come up when we ask that question, who am I? So that question is like a koan for the spiritual path, a mystery, a sacred mystery that is worth pursuing. So many of you are probably meditators, so you know, of course, that the practice of meditation is an introspective practice. It is a practice of gradually unearthing this question. Maybe it's unearthing the question and not even the answer. Who am I? So some of these answers, these identities that we land on, like our name, our work, and the sense of personality, our emotions, we can inquire about whether that particular answer, if it were not there, would someone still be there? That's a question, right? If we had been given a different name, would we still be who we are? If we had chosen a different vocation, would there still be a someone? If we were experiencing a different emotion, let's say we say, I am my emotions, then which emotion? And if we're experiencing a different emotion, would there still be someone there to experience it? So the spiritual path maybe isn't only asking the question, or perhaps the koan isn't only who am I, but also who's behind the mask of any given identity? Who's behind the layers of personality? Who's behind the emotion? Who's behind the job? Who's behind the name? So, in the tradition of the Buddha Dharma, we're looking into that question, essentially. And that practice of looking into the question, that inquiry, is called vipassana, a practice of looking in and inquiring. You might have many inquiries, but a central one is this question, who? Who is experiencing this moment? Who or what is seeing? Who, what is listening? Who is thinking? Who is meditating? So as we ask that question, we can gradually peel off the layers of name, vocation, any given state, transitory state that we're in at the moment, and drill down to something deeper and more primary that is following us through the states, through the identities, through the transitions and periods and phases of a given day, a given week, or a given life. That practice of drilling down is the practice of natural awareness. In the Tibetan tradition, this term, natural awareness, refers to that deep knower, the deep presence that is underneath our various notions of self and identity. In Tibetan tradition, it's called natural awareness. In early Buddhism, it was called selflessness, this anatta. So the question, who am I, is kind of like looking for the North Star in the sky. We go to one star and we go to another star and we gradually move in, we hone in on that more primary or basic sense of being or presence that has no shape, no color, no location, and yet is bright, vivid, aware, awake, even spacious, even tranquil, underneath the many waves of the other who, we could say the monkey mind, underneath the waves of our trains of conceptual thinking, including all the thoughts we have about self and other, the thoughts that draw us into an illusion of separateness. So first the question, who am I? And then the discovery of what's primary in our moment-to-moment experience. So to get a sense of what I mean by the primary, the foundational, if you think for a moment of a time when you were really happy in your life, maybe recently, when something happened where there was a success or an accomplishment or a sense of joy and ease. So to think of that one moment when you felt that, or maybe a day or maybe an hour, if we're lucky, right, that might last that long, those feelings. And just ask yourself, who experienced that? A sense of the most basic who. And then think of a time when you were really down, maybe in the near past. You were depressed. Things weren't going your way, and you were having a bad day. And again, ask yourself now, in this present moment, who was experiencing that depression, that sadness? See if you can get back to that sense of the who. The experiencer, not the experience, but the experiencer. And then, is that experiencer of the sadness and the experiencer of the joy, is there a continuity there? Is there a sameness? Not in the qualities of the experience, which could be elated and could be joyful, or depressed and sad and crying, but the one who knows that experience, is there some continuity there? So that kind of gets us into the spirit of this notion of a natural, basic knower, natural awareness. So our practice of meditation is largely about finding that basic, fundamental knower that is present for our happiest moments and is present for our most depressed moments. It's present when we're meditating, and it's equally present when we're distracted and we're not meditating. This basic, fundamental, clear, primary, fresh knower. So this knower doesn't really go away from moment to moment. And yet, we overlook that primary knower all the time, distracted by our thoughts, distracted by the content of the mind, distracted by the happiness and the suffering. Grasping to those appearances, wanting to draw them close, or avoiding other experiences and wanting to push them away. So in the mix of all that attachment and aversion, there's something we miss, we overlook, and it's very stable. Were we to glimpse it? So there's actually a technique of meditation for glimpsing, specifically for glimpsing that natural awareness. I mean, really, in all meditation practice, we are clearing the trees away, we're clearing the brush away, and we're getting closer to that ground, so to speak. We're getting closer to touching that ground. And it could happen at any moment if we're practicing or meditating or retreating. But there is a practice that is kind of designed, we could say, for natural awareness. And I thought we could just try it together before I describe it. So we're going to do a mini meditation, just a mini meditation together. Sensing our way into a practice of natural awareness. And we're going to start with another practice, another short meditation, then we'll take a quick break, and then another short meditation. So I'm going to do two in a row. The first one is one that you're probably familiar with. So the first meditation that we're going to start with is just a practice of settling on the breath. Bringing all of your attention to the sensation in your nostrils, as you inhale and exhale. I'm going to use this practice to settle the mind. Just staying with the breath. Now release that focus on the breath. And relinquish all effort. Letting go into the present moment, just as it is. And the only instruction is not to follow thought, not to avoid thought, allow pure awareness to be enough. So, which was easier? Did you get that there were two? Anyone space out, didn't hear me at all anymore? That happens a lot. Breathing was easier, yes. What happened when you let go?
For the second one? It's hard to describe. It felt at a loss.
Great. Let's keep going. Other experiences? Yes. Yes. Yep. No, that's very good. Good experiences. Others? Others? Let's collect some. Yes.
I found the sort of opening to just whatever comes really distressing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like I didn't have a job to do.
Right. No task. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Suddenly assaulted by all the appearance. Okay, good. Yeah.
I thought they were kind of sequential in that. I can't imagine doing this, I really, as in part one, part two. I know I would have struggled a lot more with part two if it wasn't preceded by part one.
Okay, yeah. So part one kind of grounded you, and it was easier to do part two. Okay, okay, yeah. It's a wonderful, big, diverse experience thing here. Anyone else? Other experiences or noticings? Yeah.
I'm able to see to just follow thoughts coming very random. That's what something I noticed.
Yeah.
Thoughts are crazy random.
Yeah.
And then I almost never get sleepy after a couple of minutes.
Yeah. Sleepiness, thoughts are tiring. Yes.
In the second meditation, I saw colors.
Okay.
Blue and
pink. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. So, you know, the first meditation that we were doing is a standard mindfulness practice or shamatha practice. In the classifications in the Tibetan system out of which natural meditation comes, it's classified as meditation with an object because you have something, a focus, that is gathering the energy of your attention and holding it still and steady, at least for a little while, right? But as we know, if you do that all day long, or you do that for all a 10-day retreat, or you try to, it's a whole different story. To sustain that kind of attention, we have to restart again and again and again. We have to re-engage the object of our attention. So that's standard mindfulness or shamatha practice. And the technique for entering into a relationship with natural awareness, we let go of all focus, ultimately. And our initial experience of that can be disorienting, it can be terrifying, it can be challenging, it can be distracting. But over time, if you apply this practice again and again, eventually you find a life raft. And that life raft is awareness itself. Not the thoughts, not an object, such as the breath, but the spacious, pure, non-conceptual knower that is there before the sense of something known is there. You could say the awareness prior to a dualistic engagement. So many of the experiences that you were sharing are so familiar. When I first encountered this style of meditation, which is called in this tradition, natural meditation, sometimes open awareness practice, I was utterly, did you say at a loss? I was like, that's it. That's where I was, at a loss. Well, wait, where do I rest if there's no place to garner my attention? So over time, it's possible to discover the present moment is a kind of place. Radical momentary awareness is a kind of raft, but it's a very subtle raft, the now. The here and now is a very subtle raft, but it's a stable raft. It's certainly here or now, right? It's the only thing that's really present, the now. And awareness, the knower, this very basic primary perceiver, engager, is there as a raft too. But that's so subtle, right? Very subtle. This practice, this meditation, this style of meditation is described nicely by a yogi who was named Yangonpa. So I thought I'd read his description. It's like a description for the practice that we just did in a mini way, to give you a sense of it, to give you a sense of the spirit of the practice. In pristine meditation, he means this particular style where there's no object, do not meditate with your intellect. Do not try to contrive an undisturbed state of mind. Do not regard thoughts as a problem. Do not meditate to be free of thought. Rest in your mind's own natural presence and keep watch as a witness. Meditate in this way, and you will gradually arrive at the core of tranquility. So this is one yogi's instruction for the practice. So when he says, don't meditate with the intellectual mind, he's pointing out that even when we think we're not doing that, we actually do a lot of that when we're meditating. I want to be peaceful. I wish I didn't have all this monkey mind and all these disturbing thoughts. I want to get into a trance state. I want to avoid those negative states. And I want to get myself to enlightenment. There's a lot of thinking going on in that paradigm. And a lot of future orientation, right? It's not here and now, it's like someday in the future. So he's nudging us into this place of radical presence with what is, without having to manipulate our experience in the here and now. It could be enough to be a pure witness of the experience. Sometimes this meditation is described as uncontrived. There's actually 3 points to this meditation. One is non-contrivance. Now, when I first heard that term, non-contrivance, what? Or sometimes non-fabrication. I remember hearing that when I was introduced to this style of meditation. Be uncontrived. Be free of fabrication. Be free of artifice. These are all the words that come out of these meditation texts. And what jumped into my mind when I first heard that is, oh, I'm not contrived. I don't fabricate. I'm not artificial. Right? This notion that we are not that, because when we hear those words, we think perhaps this is about honesty. And it kind of is. It kind of is. So it's much more subtle, though, than this notion of just being authentic in a kind of an exoteric way. This notion of non-contrivance or non-fabrication or non-artifice is about leaving our experience alone and not interfering in the way that we usually do. So what's meant by a contrivance is we make things more complicated than they are. And we do it every day. Like it's not enough that we're, you know, feeling lousy when we wake up in the morning. We have to spin a story about why we're feeling lousy and who made us feel lousy, right? Something is just very simple. We don't feel great today, but we have to find a cause and we have to find... So we have this way of engaging with our present experience that makes it more complicated than it need be. And we also have this way, right, so ingrained as sentient beings of wishing some experiences to be close and wishing others to be distant. And we really get that when we're, say, physically ill. I was physically ill this week, and I was really noticing that, like, just how we just want to avoid our experience. I just don't want to be in this body with this illness at this moment, right? And yet, here we are, right? We have to be there. So we kind of add on to our suffering this resistance. I don't want to suffer. Not only do I suffer, but I don't want to suffer. That's what's meant by contrivance, is this extra layer of conceptuality, this extra layer of story, this extra layer that we absolutely spontaneously and without a lot of intention add onto the freshness of this present moment. So that's what's meant by contrivance. So now, when you think about that's what's meant by contrivance, then the instruction to drop contrivance. That's challenging, actually, because it's asking us to step back from our storying and our complication, making things more complicated than they are. It asks us to release our attachment to some states and aversion to others, and to enter into a friendly relationship with the present moment where we are accepting of what is and embracing what is. That's challenging. We might be able to do that for a minute or 2 minutes, or we do that when we're comfortable and we're happy, but we don't do it so well when we're not comfortable and we're not happy. So that's what's, so the 3 points of this natural meditation. One is this non-contrivance. So we're kind of training ourselves to step back from the complication and to enter simplicity, the opposite, to take refuge in the simplicity and the purity of the present moment as it is. The second point of the practice of natural meditation is non-distraction. Now, that's interesting, right? Because what are we not being distracted from? If we're in an effortless resting with no breath focus and no particular narrow laser-like concentration, a focus of that kind, that sort, if our practice is effortless resting in an open way, without blocking anything and without grasping onto anything, what is it that we're not distracted from? We're not distracted from the present moment, which means we're not tethered to a thought about the past and we're not tethered to a thought about the future. The distract, which happens all the time, right? That's the distraction. And the practice then is to pull ourselves back from the past and the future and enter back into the present in its purity, in its essential momentary openness. The other thing that we're distracted from is natural awareness itself, the non-dual witness. Now, at first that sounds problematic or maybe koan-like or mysterious. But it's present. Every moment of our day, a witness that is not separate. We do a lot of separating with our conceptual mind, but there is a part of our mind that is just present awareness. So that's the other thing we are distracted from. We're distracted by our thoughts, we're distracted by our feelings, we're distracted by external appearances. So non-distraction is the second one. And then the third one is the best one, or the most awesome one, and that is non-meditation. Non-meditation. Which sounds so counterintuitive given that this is a practice. There's a practice going on here. But what's held, it's a practice of non-meditation. Now, what does that mean? A practice of non-meditation. So in this word, meditation, there's a sense for most of us who are meditators that there's a project, we are on a path, there's a goal. It's a pretty serious construction that we as meditators carry around. I don't know about you, but I carry around this construction, this kind of meditator's baggage that we have, which can be, in its best moments, maybe it keeps us on the path, maybe it keeps us coming back to the cushion, a commitment. But in its more complicated moments, we end up having very strong notion of what this thing that we have now constructed looks like. Good meditation, bad meditation. I had a good session today. I had a bad session today. And our meditation practice itself, the construction that we make, becomes a avenue for our yet continued attachments and aversions. The meditation project, in fact, for most of us, I don't know about you, but for me, for sure, over time, I can think back to when I started to meditate until now, it's been a constant engagement with constructions that later turn out to be less helpful than I thought, or perhaps limiting. So we're constantly creating this notion of meditation, and then so the idea of non-meditation is very similar to what you said, actually, about the what did you say, the purple elephant?
Don't
think about a purple elephant, and then you think about it. So the instruction of non-meditation is like that. Don't meditate, and then you meditate. Because when you're given the instruction, stop meditating, there's almost nothing you can do but meditate. So it's got that kind of feel, that instruction. It's applied very much in that way, that when we sit on the cushion, instead of sitting on the cushion and saying, I'm going to sit on my cushion and meditate, we can actually sit on our cushion and say, I'm not going to meditate, and see where that takes us in our practice. Just one moment. I'm going to open it to questions in just a moment. So those are some reflections on natural awareness and the practice of natural awareness and some of the key points of that practice. Something that you could, even if you have another meditation practice that is your main one, you can work with it as a kind of freshening up, as an alternative practice to work with tightness and looseness, with focus and release, and see where it takes you. So I hope it was helpful. But let's open it up to questions or comments. Yeah, back there.
Awareness, is it wrong like to be like when I try to meditate, right? Is that the same as like being aware of the moment, like of what's like?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.